The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. This is Vina Jones Cox, and you're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we're giving you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And this week, we're going to be talking to you private lenders and people who want to be private lenders, private lenders, people who have stopped being private lenders because bad stuff has happened to them, and people who are afraid to be private lenders because they've heard bad stuff has happened to other private lenders. But first, a couple of quick announcements of things that are coming up here in the next few days in the real estate world. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati has its very first meeting of 2026. I know it seems late, but the first Thursday was also January 1st this year. So yes, this is in fact the first meeting of REAGC of 2026. It's the nationwide online chapter meeting, and it is a good one, ladies and gentlemen. I kind of have a little bit of a girl crush on Anna Kelly, who is the presenter. She is a super impressive chick, years in banking and now in real estate. She's done like $400 million in deals, and that combination of things that she was like in the other kind of investment side of it, and now she's in this kind of investment side of it, means that she does a lot more like paying attention to and tracking markets than the rest of us do. So she's going to talk about the two things about the current market that are making her do stuff differently this year than she did last year, and how that affects you and what you should do too. It's online, so literally anybody who can hear my voice can join us. The way you do that is you get a link at CincinnatiRIA.com. That's CincinnatiRIA.com. Just go to the calendar, click on it. You'll have the opportunity to register. Similarly, on Sunday evening, yes, I just said Sunday evening. I just said there is a meeting on Sunday evening because we ran out of other days of the week to have meetings. It's the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association's first ever Sunday sit-down. This is going to be a year-long series open to anybody. That's just kind of like stuff that is important in the market right now that like can't wait till the summit to talk about it, okay? This month we've got John Bowens, who is going to be talking about the very last thing that you can do to decrease your 2025 taxes. It's too late to do all the stuff you could have done before December 31st, except for one thing that you can still do. And since it's John Bowens, you know, it's going to have to do with contributing to an IRA. He's got some information too about the new Roth conversion rules that came out with the latest tax bill that was published. So, you know, just come hang out. It's like 7 to 8:30. Sunday nights are more relaxed than weeknights. Again, get your seat at CincinnatiRIA.com. And finally, Cincinnati RIA is having a pop-up meeting, something that it does not do very often, but every once in a while a topic comes up. A lot of people say, oh yeah, we need to hear about that, and it doesn't fit anywhere else. So next Thursday, so not tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, there is a pop-up that Jerry Fink, recovering CPA, is doing on kind of the basics of bookkeeping for a real estate business. Some of you are dealing with that for the first time this year, trying to figure out, like, well, how do I do these taxes? I don't even think I did my books right. So it's going to be like an hour and a half of just, or an hour. Sorry, it's from 8 to 9. That's right. It's an hour. It's 8 to 9. an hour of just like, here's the stuff, you know, you need to know. Here's like the best way to keep your books, all that kind of stuff. It's to kind of get you launched so that you can actually file your taxes with a minimum of hassle this year. Again, free, CincinnatiRIA.com. There we go. I think I've now said everything that's happening over the course of the next week. So now I would like to introduce our guest. Goodwin Yee is a longtime note buyer and private lender who kind of specializes in the unusual and creative where it comes to private loans and notes. He's actually doing an all-day seminar for Cincinnati RIA in about 10 days that I'll tell you a little bit more about later. But he's here today to share his perspective on the 2026 note market, whether you should run for the hills, go all in, or maybe something in between there. He's joining us from his home in California. Goodwin, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hey, Vina, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for agreeing to do this, because I got to tell you, Goodwin, it is not that easy to get private lenders to come on the air right now.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of stuff going on, and people aren't willing to admit what kind of skeletons they might have in their closet.
Yeah, they all seem kind of stressed out right now. Like, just a huge number of the folks who, like, they take their own money and they lend it to real estate investors for deals are like touchy and stressed and nervous, and I get the feeling you're finding that with some of your private lender friends too. So why don't we share with the audience what's going on in the private lending world?
Sure. So a little bit about myself. I've been a longtime member of different associations across the country. I'm still a member of RIA GC. I still come out to RIA every year. I moved away from the Cincinnati area back in 2020 when COVID first started coming out and was affecting the U.S. And what's different at that time when I got laid off is that I had prepared myself from years earlier from a previous layoff, and since then I worked diligently to make sure that if something like that happened again, that I wouldn't be as adversely as affected as I was the first time. So since then, I've done a lot of things in real estate, had long-term rental, short-term rental, learned how to do notes, did private lending, also helped structure deals, currently looking at investing in assisted living facilities as well.
Okay. So I think that people who loan private money are aware of why private lenders are stressed out. I think a lot of the people who have borrowed private money might be aware of why lenders are stressed out, because they are, those two things are connected. But, you know, 95% of our audience has never done either one. So can you talk a little bit about what is happening in the market that has private lenders so rocked?
Okay. So maybe a little backstory might help people. So everyone who's gone through an institutional loan basically knows there's a ton of paperwork involved. It's not always requested all up front, so that way you could submit stuff. You think you basically have completed the process, and then there's another request, and then another request, and then another request. And then sometimes you have to go back and fix stuff that they might have issues with from earlier requests. Private lenders do their lending criteria differently. It's based upon what they think of the collateral. Generally, we look at, do I like this collateral? If I ended up owning this collateral, would I be okay owning it? And that's one of the first clues that if you're going to do a deal, be prepared to own that deal at some point in time.
Not that you, not that you're anxious to do that, but it could happen.
And very well, it could happen. And so out here, the Southern California area, once I got settled back in here, rebuilt my real estate connections, started doing private lending out here, and very much like what I was doing in the greater Cincinnati area, I was doing lending under $100,000. And here in Southern California, you probably can't get a driveway for $100,000. So the asset that fits into that space are mobile homes. And so I learned how to do lending for those. I would do rehab funds or other things with stick built. And I will do things like wraps. That's where I'm not funding the entire amount. I would take a portion of the funds that I have, and I will engage other lenders, either new or experienced lenders, and combine my funds with their funds to do a larger deal that I couldn't do on my own. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do currently. And with the market, not just here, but in other places, what's happened is that things are taking longer to sell. So things like mobile homes, well, there's the carrying expenses involved with the mobile homes, just as there would be with the stick build. So those expenses, when they didn't project out and borrow enough for the longer haul, when there's a higher than expected rehab cost, things like that, that basically shortens the availability of funds and the usage of those funds much shorter than they anticipated. So those things are basically causing pressure on the borrowers, and then for the lenders, now we're beginning to see more and more extension requests where there were very few in the past. Mm-hmm. And where there aren't extension requests being requested, sometimes there are real issues involved. So maturity dates come and they go and they go and they go, no responses, things like that. Mm-hmm. Generally, that's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm seeing with the other lenders as well.
So slower market, slower market means more holding costs, which may mean I run out of money to make the payments to you before the house sells. And in addition to that, there's a lot of maturity defaults, which means maybe you are getting the payments like you're supposed to, but you were also supposed to get paid off on December 1st. And now it's January 15th, and you still haven't been paid off. And it's not, I didn't default in the sense that I'm not making the payments. I defaulted in the sense that you were expecting your money back 6 weeks ago, and you have not yet received it. And what's worse is maybe I stopped returning your calls around January 7th or so, which makes, nothing makes a private lender more nervous than when you stop responding to them, when you stop explaining, answering questions, saying what your plans are, etc. Good, we need to take a quick break. I do want to invite listeners to call with any questions they have about being a private lender. 877-772-9658. Listeners is the number to call. This is your big day to talk to somebody who's been private lending a whole lot longer than I have. 877-772-9658. You can also send us a text at 513-201-8249 or an email at vinoradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox, talking today to Goodwin Yee about his view on the 2026 private lending market. Like, is this a good time to get into it? If so, under what circumstances? Because there's just a lot of, I don't know, it's like every week on... So Cincinnati Area has these every other week office hours where people can call in and like get one-on-one help. Not quite one-on-one because there's other people there too, but they can ask specific questions. And every time we've done that, so far somebody has had the problem of, I've got this borrower, he's not paying me back, it looks at this point like he's not going to be able to sell it for enough to pay me back, what can I do? And that Goodwin is an example of a big problem. A lot of the private lenders you're talking about have had little problems. The property's going to sell 3 months later than we thought it was going to sell. But there are a lot of folks out there with big problems, i.e. they put out a certain amount of money and they're going to get less money than that back. Is that something they could have avoided by doing something differently at the beginning?
Yes, and it depends on how far in the beginning that was, and again, the kind of asset that it is. So if you're going to spend the money and have a bigger risk and have more of your own funds into the one asset, it could be where you might have wanted to start with multiple lenders in there, being more conservative with your loan to value, commonly known as LTV. If you're going in on an asset that has loans on it already, and then looking at what your potential exposure would be in terms of what position you would be in the chain of title, a junior position, which is from the second lien onwards. If you're in senior position, which is the first position and the most desirable one, things are not always perfect in that position either. And so the strategy is a little bit different in each one. So it just depends on what the deficit is, who else is involved, how flexible the other parties might be, what the asset might be, and what that market might support. There's different creative strategies that could be employed. So it just depends.
I'm seeing a lot of people that just, like, the market was so good for so long that private lenders didn't have to be too careful about, you know, getting a real appraisal on a property, figuring out what the real repair costs were, figuring out if the person they were loaning money to actually had enough, you know, money that they were borrowing or had to finish those repairs. It was a little sloppy there for a while, Goodwin. I don't mean to talk bad about your profession there, but there was a lot of, you know, don't look at it too close, send the check and it'll all turn out okay, because the market was going up 15% a year.
Yes. Sales hides a lot of issues. And it's when the market turns or a project goes bad, that's when you basically learn the character of your borrower, how well GCs and trades basically performed, how well the borrower managed the funds that were going out. I mean, one of the big issues for lenders, specifically targeting lenders, I'll say that. Lenders generally don't go through the education that they need to do lending properly with. And I'll give you just a quick example. Most people who do the stick-built asset class, so let's say single-family homes, generally, even if they're lending only in their local market, they will not walk the property and then go through the list of repairs that need to be made. They will not go through and see what kind of scope is needed for that particular project. They won't review the sequence of events by which work is supposed to be done. And then they won't draw out how funds are going to be dispersed per the phases involved in that particular project, what is commonly known as a draw schedule. Most lenders don't do anything like that. Most lenders don't even know what a draw schedule is, let alone actually walk the project and then make sure things are actually done. Materials that were expected to be installed actually got installed. things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna take it a step further. Good one, because a lot of people kind of jumped into private lending over the last 4 or 5 years because they were real estate investors or wanted to be real estate investors, but they couldn't find deals, so they were sitting on a bunch of cash. And other people found deals and seemed to know what they were doing. So they would loan their cash to other people temporarily while they were still looking for their own deal, right? That was a common arc over the last five to 10 years. So I will take it a step further and say not only did they not walk the properties, did they not agree up on a draw schedule, they just believed whatever the borrower told them. You know, they said it's going to cost this much and it's going to be in this order. And something I've learned about putting my money out to anywhere is if I don't know what I'm doing, I better find somebody who does know what they're doing and ask them if this is right. So these folks wouldn't even like take the information they had from the borrower and show it to somebody who'd done a bunch of rehabs and say, does this look right?
I totally agree. Keep in mind, and everyone who's investing should understand this, there is always an element of risk.
Mm-hmm.
So even with good education, how do you know you're doing it correctly? Even if you're following the formulas, the techniques, the paperwork, and things like that, how do you know for sure? Because this might be your first or second time. Maybe your first time, you were lucky. Maybe the second time, you were lucky. You don't know what bullets you dodged because you were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And when a project is done on time and it's sold and everyone makes money, you don't know what kind of problems were dodged at that point. And so I always advise people before they do an investment, loan their money, see what kind of track record that person has. Ask other people, have you done any investing with them before? And this is with the lender. To try and increase your chances of a good loan deal.
Mm-hmm.
Learn from them about who is it that they are typically lending to. Do those borrowers have a good track record? Or are they basically looking at who can I charge the highest rate on? Okay, so basically the more inexperienced borrowers. So judge for yourself how much risk you want to take.
If you're
going
to lend to inexperienced borrowers, you better have the experience to make up for their lack of experience is my take on all of that. Good, we need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to take phone calls from listeners who want to know more about how to do safe private lending at 877-772-9658. We'll also look at any texts that happen to come in on our text line at 513-201-8249 or answer your questions at vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Goodwin Yee, who has been in the private lending market long enough to have seen markets come and go. And this one is going a little bit, and that means that there are some folks out there who are really struggling with situations that they have. If you are in one of those situations and you wanted to call and ask for advice, that would be a good use of our time today. 877-772-9658, or if that's too much, you can send an email with the details, vinaradio@gmail.com. Let's go to line one and talk to Russell in Connecticut. Russell, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, it's Russell again. Thank you, Goodwin, coming on. Wanted to ask about, you mentioned education, just getting started, especially. Anything particular, what do you particularly recommend, steps?
That's a great question, Russell, because I actually meant to follow up with Goodwin on that as well, because just like everything else, like you're not going to go buy an apartment building without knowing how to evaluate an apartment building and how to manage an apartment building and how to rehab an apartment building. And it's shocking how many people will jump both feet into this private lending business without ever taking the first class about due diligence, paperwork, insurance, you know, like there's all these things that you need to know. And it happens that Edwin is teaching a one-day class on that for Cincinnati REIA on June the 24th. So it's not June. Why do I come on the radio and I don't know what month it is anymore. I mean, I sit here and I listen to the freaking weather reports saying it's slippery outside and there's snow falling. And then I'm like, oh, it's June 24th. Ugh. It's January the 24th. It's in 10 days. Okay. And, you know, it's 47 bucks. So, I mean, it's 47 bucks if you sign up before that Thursday and also if your group is participating in it. So, CincinnatiREIA.com. If you're a Cincinnati REIA member, go check your own group. But yeah, so, Goodwin, can you just like sketch out, like, these are all the things that if you don't know them, you should not be private lending?
Sure. If you have not, if you don't know what a promissory note is, you should not be private lending. If you don't know what should be in a promissory note, just from a technical perspective, what are the elements of a promissory note that should be in there to make it a valid promissory note and how to double check the information in there? You definitely should not be private lending. And if you are lending your own money or especially other people's money, if you don't have the provisions and clauses that help protect lenders, you definitely should not be private lending. Just things like that.
Yeah, if you don't know which of the documents needs to be recorded in the public record in order to protect you, you shouldn't be private lending.
Exactly.
If you don't know how to Google a borrower's name and see if you can find out anything about them that you would have preferred not to find out, you probably shouldn't be private lending. I got one of the emails that just came in on our BeanaRadio@gmail.com line is, this one is from Meg, and she says, would somebody please say out loud that if someone is defaulting to you, they probably are defaulting to other people too. I found out after I chased a borrower around for 3 months that she's also in default to about a dozen other people. It's really important to ask other people what they know about borrowers. Yep.
Definitely.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard it said, Goodwin, that there's what is it, the three P's? Is it P's of what makes a good loan? And it's the people, the property, and the paperwork. Do I have that right?
Process. That's absolutely it.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you don't know how to research all three of those things, you probably shouldn't be making private loans, Russell.
Yeah, and for anybody else getting started especially, mm-hmm. even more so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the big mistakes people made was like especially hard money loans, like ones that are only going to be 6 months to a year and they're at like high interest rates, 12%, 14%. I'm sure Goodwin, when you're loaning in second position, is even more than that. I mean, that just sounds like a lot of money. And people are like, oh, my God, I want to get that. And it's almost like the lenders sort of felt in competition with each other, like, I want to make this loan. And did less due diligence than they probably should have because I don't want to miss the chance to make this loan. And you should never, I always say that tenants who know how to work the system can smell inexperienced landlords, and that's who they want to go live with. Because they're not going
to
do a good job.
And they never want to think too much, in other words.
Right. They want to be with people who are going to super check them out and like be super strict about actually paying the rent and whatnot. And I suspect that borrowers who are scam artists can do the same thing.
Yep. And in the lending space, What can happen there is that someone will say, I need money to go ahead and finish up a rehab. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a third position loan or maybe a fourth position loan. Keep in mind, this is California. You know, there's debt on everything. Mm-hmm. And they will say, I'm willing to go ahead and pay 20% interest, 25% interest, 30% interest, mm-hmm. and it will be a 90-day loan, 180-day loan. Sounds great, right?
Mm-hmm. It sounds great, assuming I get paid back.
Exactly, right? So it's not the yield, and one of my mentors said, don't chase the yield, mm-hmm. right? Don't be attracted by what the projected yield looks like. Look at what the actual return is going to be look like. And the return is return of my money, mm-hmm. not the return on the deal. I want my money. So focus on what is going to make that return of money actually happen.
Right. Return of my investment is more important than return on my investment. So, yeah, Russell, if you're interested in doing this, I'd go to CincinnatiArea.com and check out Goodwin's class on the 24th.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Great.
Thank you for your call. Let's go to line two and talk to Alan in Columbus, Ohio. I assume it's Columbus, Ohio. Might not be Columbus, Ohio. We'll see. Alan, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Well, hello there, Rena and Goodwin.
It is Columbus, Ohio.
Sunny California. It is. So I heard a lot of good things Goodwin was mentioning there that private lenders should be doing. And since I do a little bit of that myself, I often will try to work with the people that are borrowing and doing the fix and flip so that I can walk the property and walk that rehab list. But the part you didn't talk about was inspections on the draws.
Mm-hmm.
Should that also then be a requirement?
Well, wait. I'm going to have to throw a jargon flag on inspections on the draws. What does that mean?
Well, you do part of the work and your contractor wants to get paid because it's Friday. And so you have to determine what schedule you're going to make your payments to them as they make progress on rehabbing the property. And therefore, you need to make sure that those agreed contingent or those agreed items have been completed prior to paying for them, mm-hmm. or prior to giving them that portion of the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Goodwin, explain why it's important to do what Alan is saying to do.
Oh, it's an excellent question. I didn't go into the nitty-gritty details, into the weeds on it, but I'd be happy to go ahead and spend a minute or so on it. So typically with that draw schedule, you basically have an idea when the work is going to be started, what materials are needed, what kind of funds are needed, and then as you're actually going through and executing, you know there's going to be project slip, a trade is not going to show up. You know, you discover things once you open up a wall or things like that. Material is not always available when you want it, things like that. So when you are doing the inspection of the work that is supposed to be done, I kind of alluded to earlier, like materials, making sure that let's say you bought this particular six-panel door from Home Depot, part number, whatever, okay. You walk the property. Okay, here's a list of materials that I expect to see. This is the doorknob I expect to see. This is the light switch I expect to see. This is the light fixture I expect to see. This is the door, sink, plumbing, all these things that I expect to see. Flooring, paint, molding, all those things I expect to see. If you're at the point where there's appliances, yeah, did the actual appliances get there that I expected to see? And is everything there? So if I bought six doors, do I have six doors installed?
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes lenders who don't walk the property, they don't do the inspection before next phase of draws are done, they don't know that substitutions might have been done. Or it might be the right door, but this door is beat up because mm-hmm. it was pulled from another property. Mm-hmm. And it was sitting in a storage shed or someone's garage and home. You know, I can go ahead and put this in there, and now I have a little bit of extra money in my pocket. What kind of condition are these things in?
And the purpose from the private lender's perspective is, I agreed to lend you, I'm just going to make up a number that's easy for me to divide in my head. I agreed to lend you $30,000 to do $30,000 worth of work. I agreed to give that to you in three $10,000 batches. I'm not giving you $10,000 if you've done $5,000 worth of work, because that's what's called you getting ahead of me. I just gave you more money than the work you have done, and I cannot be guaranteed that you're going to spend that money on improving the asset that is backing my loan. And that, I mean, I made you the loan based on the idea of the after repaired value of the asset, not of the, you know, the terrible condition it was in when you bought it. So super important, Alan. That is absolutely right. You got to be careful to make sure that the borrower doesn't get ahead of you. And super important, Goodwin, what you said about, didn't you say you were getting the, Home Depot cherry wood, real wood cabinets? Why are the IKEA cabinets installed here?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Very good.
And a key thing that was not mentioned but is oftentimes not done too are the releases from the trades saying that they've completed their work, I have inspected their work, and making sure that they're not going to make a claim again saying I didn't get paid for my work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's part of the reason you're releasing money is so they can pay their contractors. It would be really good if they actually used that money to pay their contractors. I believe we need to take one more quick break. Appreciate your call, Alan. Anybody else who has any questions, send them to vinoradio@gmail.com or to our text line at 513-201-8249. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Goodwin Yee about the market for private loans in 2026. So, Goodwin, we've been a little warny so far. We've been a little bit like, don't do this, don't do this. This is dumb. Do you feel like you're going to make private loans in 2026? Like there's still good money to be made?
I think so. I have to be more cautious.
Okay. Say more.
Cautious like you're basically gonna... mean I'm going to insist on more experience. I will want more vetting of the trades and GCs involved. I will look at the ARV, I'll walk them through that one, and I'll start throwing different questions, okay? What are examples of those questions? Well, it could be you have a partner in your LLC, and your partner no longer is around. How does that affect your deal? Your partner is going through a divorce. How is that going to affect your deal? Your partner is a GC and you are the paper person and the GC decides to not be the GC anymore. How is that going to affect your deal?
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to start shooting more bullets into a deal and just see how they respond. And I'm going to ask for more collateral. I'm going to ask for a lower loan to value. I'm going to look at a lot of different things to make sure that there's a lot of leeway in case things happen. And I'm sure they're just like what we're seeing over here. There are properties that basically drop 10-15%. They take twice, three times as long to go ahead and sell. Carrying costs balloon. Materials continue to go up or labor. You have to swap out labor because the first guy disappeared, second guy disappeared. We have a term for that, but I don't want to mention that.
We are on live
so
radio. That's, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I think this is probably a little horrifying to a lot of potential borrowers who are listening. I think they're all going, oh my God, just when the deals are coming, the private lenders don't want to lend anymore. And I don't think that's what they need to be hearing. I think what they need to be hearing is as borrowers, you got to do better deals to attract private money to it.
the days of 100% acquisition, so purchase price, and 100% rehab are gone. Mm-hmm. And they should be gone. They really shouldn't have existed for as long as they did.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to make a small amendment to that. If somebody brings me a deal that they can buy and fix for half what it's going to be worth fixed up, I still might fund 100% of that deal.
Okay.
If they're experienced or they have a partner who's experienced.
It's hard to say 100% ironclad rule because there will always be exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good one. I think we have a text that came in.
That's right, Vina. We do have a text, and it is a question for Goodwin. It's a two-part question, and we'll start with multiple lenders combining funds for one note. How are lenders prioritized, if at all? Mm. And the second question.
Well, let's have that one first. We don't want to
go with that.
Forget what that one was. So you had said, Goodwin, that you sometimes will do notes with other lenders. Okay, so now the loan defaults, who gets paid first?
The other lenders. Let's go through an example just for illustration's sake. So let's say we have a property that we are going to buy, so 100% purchase, or basically we are going to purchase it. So there's going to be a first position at the very least, to go ahead and secure it against that property. If I am using other people's money, they will be, I will try and structure it as a wrap. I won't go through all the details of a wrap because that could be a class by itself. But at a very, very high level, they will be in the first position lien. So in the senior most, in the best position that you can have in chain of title. Mm-hmm. And because they are more important than my position. They have to be paid first before I do. They are in that first position. I will have my money in a second position. Mm-hmm. And my note will basically encompass their numbers. So if it's an $80,000 loan and I only have $20,000, those lenders who comprise the balance, $60,000, they will be in first position.
Okay. Now you said they will be in first position. So it's possible there are two people in that first position mortgage?
It is possible.
Okay. And then so now if it goes bad, in the first scenario, it goes bad, it ends up going all the way to the foreclosure sale, the first position gets paid first, and then whatever's left over you get.
If there's
anything left, yes. In this scenario where there's more than one person in that first position loan, do they just split the money that comes out of the sale according to their interests?
Yeah.
Okay, so $100,000 first, I put in 50, George put in 50, it goes to sale, we only get 90 at the sale, George gets 45, I get 45, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
And ahead of time, we will create a document that basically shows what that split is. And again, a moment ago, I said there's not 100% ironclad rules. And it could very well be where someone is going to put in more money because they want something else. And someone who has less money, they're contributing something else. And they agree that the split might be different. Now, doing this, with more complexity, like self-directed IRAs and things like that, different story. That's really getting to the weeds at that point.
Sure.
So it depends on the deal and what it is that each party wants to get out of that deal.
Sure. And I think the important lesson there, I don't know who the asker was there.
It just says it's a Columbus area code.
Columbus area code. The important thing is that you know what position you are in. And you heard me say you know what position you are in, not you were told what position you were in. Because I talk to people from time to time who are like, I thought it was a first position mortgage, but then it turned out I was in third. And I said, how did that happen? I don't know. He told me it was in first. It happened because you didn't get a title search, which is another one of the things that you need to know. And Bob, if you will forward me that text, I will make sure that the rest of it gets answered. But unfortunately, we are out of time to answer the second part of the question. But if you're interested in being a private lender, strongly recommend Goodwin's class. Cincinnati RIA is hosting. So are some other groups. So you might want to check with your group and see if they are. If not, go to CincinnatiRIA.com, grab your ticket, and you will find out all the due diligence stuff that you need to do to make sure that you are as safe as can be in your private lending. So, Goodwin, appreciate your time today. I know we
Thank you for having me on.
I know we could have spent another hour just talking about what we wanted to talk about, but folks have that opportunity in a week and a half. And also, folks, remember Cincinnati RIA's nationwide online chapter meeting for the month of January is tomorrow night, also at CincinnatiRIA.com. We will see you next week, where we'll be back with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.